Hockey News Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, Edward Fraser, here with, as always, Ryan Kennedy. Before we get started, I want to let everybody know that Future Watch, our ever-popular annual Prospect Look magazine, is out on newsstands very soon, probably this Friday. You can order it online at THN.com immediately if you can't wait to get your hands on it. Hopefully it gets to you sooner. You can pick up your copy, or if you're a subscriber, thanks for subscribing, and you'll have it soon. On the podcast today, I'm going to have an interview with Barrie Colts GM Jason Ford. Our 2018 draft spotlight is on Rasmus Kupari, and our NHL team spotlight, the Detroit Red Wings, who need a little hope at this time of year, and we'll try to give it to them. But Ryan, let's start with the headlines. University of New Hampshire coach Dick Umelli, retires after 28 seasons with the team.
Yeah, just another big landmark for college hockey. It seems like you get a lot of classic coaches that stick with one program for a long time. Dick Umelli, synonymous with the Wildcats. Some pretty good talents gone through there during his era. James Van Riemsdyk, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Brett Pesce, Dan Winnick. Six-time Hockey East Coach of the Year, 18 NCAA tournament appearances, 4 Frozen Fours. Just a well-liked guy in the NCAA environment. And best wishes to Dick Umelli.
Michael DiPietro doing big things in the OHL.
Yeah, it's nice for Vancouver Canucks fans. They already have one goalie of the future in Thatcher Demko, and then DiPietro is looking pretty hot as well. So he sets a Windsor Spitfires season record with 7 shutouts this year. The old title holder was Michael DiPietro last year with 6. So you can see he's obviously been very successful with the Spitfires. They won the Memorial Cup last year when they were hosting with him in net. The interesting thing for me is this season, Windsor was starting to rebuild. So they dealt away Logan Brown, they dealt away Sean Day, they dealt away Gabe Vilardi. But DiPietro is still putting up numbers. Even though he's got a younger cast around him, he's still getting the job done. And, he was an interesting player last year before he was drafted because he doesn't have a lot of size. He's about 6 feet tall. But he's so athletic, he's so dialed in, he's one of those goalies that never gives up on a save that, the results speak for themselves. And I think, when you look at UC Saros in Nashville this year, who's putting up great numbers, maybe there still is some room in the NHL for smaller goalies if they happen to be elite like these guys are. When I look at DiPietro, it's hard to think of another goalie right now that I would want in net if I'm Team Canada at the World Juniors next year. He's looking that good, so it'll be fun to see what he can do.
A powerhouse team in the AJHL has really stood out to you.
Yeah, the Okotoks Oilers of the Alberta Junior A League, they ended the regular season on a 24-game win streak. Needless to say, that was pretty good. Might have set some records there. They head into the playoffs, and this team in particular is interesting if you're a draft watcher. They got a couple of kids. Jacob Bernard-Docker, who we've talked about on the show before, actually had him as a guest on not too long ago. He's a North Dakota commit. Very good mobile defenseman. Very efficient. Very structured. I could see him maybe catching on at the end of the first round, depending on how things shake out. If a team really likes him, he could go top 31. If not, you're definitely seeing him earlier in the second round. Another player that's just kind of a personal fave, Austin Wong. Talked about him as well after the CJHL Top Prospects game. Just a maniac on the ice, kind of a Brendan Gallagher where, he'll put you through the boards. He finishes every check, and he's not the biggest guy, but he's got some nice scoring hops to him as well. He can really wire the puck. And I think he had 250 penalty minutes this year for the Oilers. So that tells you a lot about his game. He's actually committed to Harvard. So smart guy as well.
Got an interview with Barrie Colts GM Jason Ford. Before we get into that interview, Rye, though, let's give a kind of an overview for the listeners about Barrie and their season up to this point.
Yeah, Colts have been very good this year. And, obviously the player that has got a lot of focus on him is Andrei Svechnikov. We're looking at him as the potential number 2 pick in the draft. This is his first OHL season, played in the USHL last year with Muskegon, younger brother of Evgeny Svechnikov, who we'll talk about later in the Red Wings set. So he's been a big part, and Jason Ford has done a nice job surrounding Svechnikov with talent. He got Aaron Luchuk, an overager who the Ottawa Senators signed as a free agent this year. They got him from Windsor, and then they also made a very interesting deal to get Dmitry Sokolov, the Minnesota Wild pick, from the Sudbury Wolves. They traded Alexei Lapanov, who had really good chemistry with Svechnikov, and they had played together with Russia internationally in past seasons. So, Ford making moves, and the Colts are one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, so they've got a chance to go pretty far in the playoffs, because a lot of the most dangerous teams are in the West in the OHL. So it'll be interesting to see how well Barry can do.
Here's Ryan's talk with Barry Colts GM Jason Ford.
I'm here with Barry Colts GM Jason Ford. And Jason, a very exciting year for the Colts. A lot of nice high-end talent, including Andrei Svechnikov, who's going to be a very high pick in the NHL draft this summer. So to begin with, just your thoughts on Andrei and what he's meant for the Colts so far.
Andrei, he's come into the OHL this year. I mean, I think playing for Muskegon last year obviously helped the transition for him, and living in North America really helped him a lot. But I mean, Andre's a kid that, I think last year when we scouted him, I mean, first knew about Andrei was a couple of years ago. He played as a double underage at the under 18 tournament. You know, I'd seen his brother play before in Sochi at the under 18 tournament and tried to get him. He went to Cape Breton, as you know. But so I was going to say, the one thing, you see Andrei, you no doubt see a great player. He's a very strong kid. He has size and skill and everything, and you see he's a great player. But off ice, I'd always heard he was a good kid. But it's amazing, the amount of work he puts into his game off ice. Like, this just didn't all come overnight for him, all the skill level and talent he has. He's really worked very hard at it. He continues to be our hardest working kid. We say to a lot of these kids here, if you kind of look at Andrei and follow what he does, that's a good base and a good start for anybody else, right? So he's, he's a great kid. His English is coming along, and he's had a great year. He had an unfortunate injury, obviously, before Christmas, and he's missed some OHL games because of the World Junior. So he's not going to get a full season, and obviously, but I mean, his point totals are great. His compete level is always there. He's a big, strong kid, but he still obviously has a lot to learn about the game. But I mean, he's going to score. He's going to score goals at the NHL level anyway. You slice it from what we've seen here, and some of the players, like him and that have come through here. But time will tell when he makes it. But there's no question he's going to be a really good NHL player, and a guy that's going to be, he's going to be a sniper in the NHL for sure.
And you acquired another pretty good Russian sniper during the season in Dmitry Sokolov, coming over from Sudbury. He's a Minnesota Wild prospect. What has Dmitry brought to this team?
Well, we play Sudbury the most out of any opponent. We play them 8 times a year, right? So he's one of the players on Sudbury that was really kind of scared us over the last few years, right? Because, if he's going to get it in the puck in a scoring position, there's a good chance that he's going to put it in the back of the net. I think since he was drafted, if you look at it, he scored 48 goals. He's almost scored, he's almost kind of approaching near 100 goals since he was drafted, right? So we see him as the best pure goal scorer in the OHL. And, when the trade, we started talking about the trade, it really kind of came up late, really before the trade deadline, January 10th. It really just made a lot of sense for us. We figured we could, if Lipanov doesn't come back here next year, we figured we can go back into the European draft and replace that. So, but Dmitry, he's a really good kid. He's a good team guy. Conditioning has never been his strength, right? So he needs to work on that, continue working on that. But I mean, the Minnesota Wild have an interesting prospect there, because from pure goal scoring ability, I mean, he's second to none, I think, in our league. And, he can work on those other things and his play away from the puck. But I don't know, the way we've seen it, it's been pretty good here. He's really put in more of an effort here. So he's an interesting prospect that obviously Minnesota's going to make a decision on sometime before the draft. But he's brought a lot of good qualities here, and he's, you know, above all, he's a really good kid, really respected by his teammates, and he wants his teammates to do well.
Now, centering those two players right now, Aaron Luchuk, who came over from Windsor and was signed as a free agent by the Ottawa Senators earlier this season. He's had just a tremendous overage year in the OHL. Why did you want to acquire Aaron?
Well, we were looking at it. We acquired him just before Christmas. You know, we looked at it, you know, the pick. I see some of these trades in the OHL now, and there's, you know, not two or three picks, it's like five, six, seven, or eight picks, right? And we had to give up three with this deal, and we don't want to give up a Curtis Douglas, but we just felt with our depth here and with some other good young players, we could afford to do that. So, you know, the way we looked at it, we liked where our team was going, and we thought we hadn't played too many games. We had everybody healthy before Christmas, too, if you look at it. So we just thought if we could, you know, add, you know, a player like him, and we obviously added Sokolov later on. We added Fergus earlier in the year, but we felt we added a player like him that could really, you know, play with Andre and add a lot to the team. And I mean, he's, you know, he's an A1 kid, and you know, he stood up at one of our first team meetings when he was here and talked about, you know, winning the World Cup and everything and what that was about. And I mean, you see with Aaron, like, his point production has been right on par with what it was in Windsor, and you know, even maybe better. But he's you know, some guys get signed, you know, that's the ultimate goal, right? With him, there's been absolutely no let up whatsoever. He's continued to lead this team and lead the charge. And I think what it boils down to is this is a player that's, he's gotten a lot better in the last few years of his OHL career, and he really wants to win. He brings a lot to this room here, rubs off on everybody, and he just really wants to win.
Excellent. And another player that you've been very happy with this season is Joey Keane, who is eligible for the draft, was passed over last year. Why do you think Joey's attracting some attention this year?
Well, Joey, one of the reasons we drafted him, we really liked his skating. We really liked just the way he played the game. He was the right shot. You know, we did a lot of homework on him. He's got our introduction to Joey Keane was, he has a brother that's a 97, an older brother that's a 97 birth date. He came to our training camp, so we made a connection with the family. There's four of them in the family, and four brothers that all play hockey and are all good. So, but Joey, we always liked his skating, and he seems to really pick that up a level this year. When you notice him, he carries the puck, he lugs the puck real well, he shoots it well. He's a really tough kid, but he's a really good backward skater, and he rarely gets beat one-on-one in situations like that. So he brings a lot of different elements, Joey, and he's really starting to come into his own. And I think that 1 year in the league last year, plus the year in the USHL before, have really helped his game a lot. And, you know, I think he's definitely going to hear his name called, you know, in Dallas at the June entry draft.
And the final player I wanted to ask you about, Ryan Suzuki, who you picked first overall in the OHL draft last year, brother of Nick Suzuki, the Vegas Golden Knights pick. How have you felt about Ryan's rookie season with Barry?
Well, I think Ryan's the type of player we scouted him last year. You know, sometimes he wouldn't, you know, take the puck and go end-to-end or dominate. That wasn't, you know, his game. And I think maybe, you know, as time comes, that you watch his brother play, Nick, and sometimes he does that. You know, Ryan's a little bit of a different player, but Ryan's vision is really elite. He sees the ice, like, he sees players, and he knows what he wants to do with the puck. So I think as Ryan, you know, gets older, he gets stronger, he's got the height, he just needs to fill out. You know, he's going to be, we see him as a, you know, a 3-4 year OHL player that's going to put up a lot of points here. Comes from a great family, a lot of character. He's really well liked around the room. He's got a great sense of humor. You know, the school rave about him. You know, everything the kid, you know, does from that aspect. He's the type of kid that really, he feels things out, and he's felt out the league. And as he's gone on, he's gotten better, and he's a really smart player, and he makes adjustments along the way. So, you know, Ryan, I don't know, the sky's the limit for him. He's definitely a first-round pick, in my mind, in the NHL next year. I mean, maybe that's easy to say because his brother went in the first round, obviously, to Vegas. But, you know, he's going to be heavily scouted next year, and I see him, you know, having a kind of an all-star type season next year, even as a 17-year-old in this league.
Now it's really interesting when we look at the NHL and teams that want to win the Stanley Cup, a rebuild typically takes really 6 to 8 years if you're being realistic. In junior, it's very different. You're looking at a small window, and for example, your Barry Colts, you know, last in the division last season, first this year. Can you just talk about how you put together a team knowing that the cycle is very tight in junior?
Yeah, and I think the cycle, too, where it sometimes drops off, if you do, you know, well, you're obviously your players are going to do well, you know, you may lose them to the NHL pros earlier, right? So we deal with that, but that's really out of our control. I think the thing is with when we finish us finishing last, the OHL this time around got the number one overall pick, right? If you look at, you know, past history, if you've had a, you know, the two or three pick, there's a, you know, a big difference in player there sometimes, right? Which we were lucky enough to get Andre, and he was obviously OHL ready. We got Ryan, and he's obviously a really good player. We talked about him, but I think, you know, a lot of the experience, the guys, the 99s and the 98s, and the, you know, the 2000s for that matter too. We had carried three 2000s regularly last year. The experience they got, you know, you can't really, it's hard to put into words, you know, what that meant to those players. You see the Joey Keens of the world, the Lucas Chiodos, the Zach Magwoods, all these players, Jason Wilms, their production has gone up immensely. And, you know, I think that, you know, the cycle in junior hockey is, you know, anywhere from, call it 1 to 3 years. I mean, really, you know, most of the winning teams are heavy in 19-year-olds, and they all, you know, most cases have three really good 20-year-olds. So the cycle in junior hockey is obviously different from the NHL. You know, but we're, you know, you just kind of have to go with the swing sometimes. And I think, you know, I don't know, we're big believers if you can really kind of hone in and nail your drafts and do really well, ahead of the curve in the league on your drafts, and when you lose those players sometimes unexpectedly, you know, you're going to have a good base and you're going to have other pretty good players to come in. And, you know, another thing is Dale, you know, along the league, he's one of the best developing coaches of players in the league, right? You get him the right type of player with the right attitude, the right work ethic. You know, I mean, it's a real good situation for those types of players, and you know, they're going to get better, and he's going to, you know, push them to new levels they never thought they could be. Look at some of the players that he's developed here over the years. So I think you've kind of put in all those factors, and that's really helped, and, you know, it's obviously shown this year with the standings, you know, jumping up like we have, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for this. It's been perfect, Jason.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our 2018 draft spotlight for this edition of the podcast is Rasmus Kupari. Ryan, tell us about Kupari.
Rasmus Kupari is one of the top Finnish prospects for the 2018 draft. Plays for Karpat Oulu in the Liga, and he's had a very interesting year. I've been talking to scouts about him, and there's a lot of intrigue. There's some questions, too. So he started off the year at the Ivan Hlinka tournament in the Czech Republic, had a huge tournament. That's a very good under-18 tournament for those who don't listen to the podcast regularly. 7 points in 4 games, had a really good start. I think he had 5 points in one of the games. So there was a lot of hype, people saying top 10, you know, he's looking like, you know, maybe the next Sebastian Aho or, you know, something of that line. It's like he's going to be a top-end Finnish guy. So he starts off there. Played at the World Juniors, basically was a depth forward, didn't get a lot of responsibility, didn't get a lot of ice time. You know, when I saw him, he wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but he wasn't, like, producing a lot. Nobody on Finland really was. It was an off year for them. And then perhaps most intriguing is that at the recent Five Nations tournament in Plymouth, Michigan, you had a ton of top-end talent. Andrei Svechnikov was there. Adam Boqvist came from Sweden. Obviously, you had all the NTDP kids like Oliver Wallstrom and Joel Farabee coming for Team USA because they were hosting it. Kupari originally was supposed to be there, but at the last second, he pulled out. And he wasn't hurt, so there's kind of a bit of mystery right now as to what happened there. What I will point out is that, you know, talking to scouts, one of the things they wanted to see was for him to get more ice time. And, you know, granted, he is playing against men for that Karpat team. But recently, things are looking up because He's been put on a line with Christian Vesalainen, the Winnipeg Jets first rounder. Vesalainen had been loaned to Karpat from HPK, and seems like Kupari and Vesalainen had some pretty good chemistry right away. They were producing points, playing second line minutes, and hopefully, you know, there's not a lot of season left, but I know scouts are really going out to see those Karpat Oulu games because they want to get a good read on Kupari, who has a lot of skill and he has a lot of upside.
The Detroit Red Wings have obviously struggled this season after having their playoff streak broken last year. And again, they don't have a great system, but they do have some intriguing prospects. Ryan, who are the biggest names within the organization that you're looking at?
Well, I'll start off with Michael Rasmussen, their first rounder from 2017. And, you know, he was a bit of a controversial pick because he's not necessarily going to be that top-line scoring center. And I know a lot of Detroit fans were kind of exasperated where they finally had, you know, a big pick. And they take a kid who very well may be a really solid second-liner. At worst, he'll be a shutdown center because he's 6'6", great reach. But he does have offensive talent. And he's having a pretty good season with Tri-City. I think there's still a lot there, and you know, there's talk of him maybe even, you know, getting a shot at the Red Wings next year. I wouldn't mind seeing him play one more year in the dub, just really, you know, rack up points, have an impact internationally with Canada, you know, take on a good role there. But yeah, the potential is certainly there. Another WHL player to keep in mind, Dennis Chalowski, and again, sort of an interesting path where this is a kid that started off with St. Cloud State, played there for a season after the Red Wings drafted him the first round, and you know, the Huskies kind of struggled, and he felt that the major junior route was better for his development. So this season, he went over to the Portland Winterhawks. He started off with Prince George, was traded to Portland Winterhawks, and he's put up really good numbers. You know, he is a mobile puck mover, obviously has a great offensive dimension to his game. Again, my question is, what's the next step? Do we see Chalowski come back to Portland next year, or do we see him go to the AHL, which he would be eligible for because he wasn't drafted at a major junior. He was drafted out of the BCHL in Chilliwack. So I would like to see him play against men. I would like to see how he does against stronger competition. And I think, you know, he's proven at the WHL level that he can put up points from the blue line. I think it's time for the next step for him.
Let's stay in the CHL and talk about Giovanni Smith.
Yeah, Giovanni Smith playing for a really nice Kitchener Rangers team. They just clinched the division for the first time since 2008. And they've been pretty good. They just happen to be in a division with some very good teams. But, you know, this is a power forward, net front presence. You know, he can drop the gloves if you need him to, but he can also get you points. You know, this will be his last year in major junior. And again, like, here's a player where it's time to see what he can do at the pro level. I think, you know, there's no harm having him in the AHL. But I would also say that, you know, I could also see him making the Red Wings in a fourth-line role because he brings a skill set they don't necessarily have. You know, you've got some gritty guys coming up like Tyler Bertuzzi, but Smith's he's a lot stronger. And I think he's the type of player who, you know, he could be on a second line, but he could also have an effect on a bottom six line, and you wouldn't be wasting him. You know, you could get value out of him because he is versatile like that.
Let's turn stateside to the USHL and talk about Philip Larson.
Yeah, Philip Larson has had just a tremendous season with Tri-City. I think he's been goalie of the week, you know, several times already. Really locking things down for the Tri-City Storm. He was Sweden's backup at the World Juniors, but he did see some time, looked pretty good. He's just a solid all-around goaltender. He's got some nice size. You know, he doesn't get rattled. It's a player where, you know, goalies, you always have to take the long view, but I see a lot of potential in Philip Larson, and I think him getting such a big role in Tri-City has been very good because, at this age, you want as much crease as possible, and Larson's been getting that. I think it's been great for his development.
A couple players in the Red Wing system ruminating in the NCAA.
Yeah, I'll start off with Keith Petrozelli, another intriguing goaltender. He's a tower. He's like 6'5". This was his freshman season with Quinnipiac, and the Bobcats are still alive in large part because of Keith Petrozelli. The first round in the ECAC tournament, they swept Yale. Petrozelli only gave up 2 goals total, 1 per game. And this is great because his season started off pretty rough. Quinnipiac, they just weren't clicking. And, you know, for Petrozelli, obviously he was coming up a level, coming out of the USHL, and it took him a while to get his feet under him. But by the end of the season, he was looking good. 3 straight wins, including those 2 over Yale. And I think it was really positive. His save percentage ended up over .900. And again, he's just a freshman, so plenty of time. I would expect that we would see him play, probably all 4 years in Quinnipiac. There's no rush there. That's a program that I think they'll get a bit better. They were very good for a couple of years, and now they're kind of on the downside of a cycle. But I think we're going to see them get up again, and Petrozelli will be a big part of it. Another player, Boston University defenseman Casper Cock-Consalo. Interesting player, again, another USHLer. No one was really sure what kind of impact he would have as a freshman. There's a lot of tools there, more of a defensive defenseman, great size, a lot of upside because of that frame. And, when he was drafted, scouts knew this is a player where if he could figure everything out, you'd really have something there. And the tricky thing with the Terriers this year is that they have so many good young defensemen that they were often sitting players early in the year, not because they were playing poorly, but just they had to cycle them through. Because keep in mind, Dante Fabro is still there. Chad Chris is still there. You add in Cam Crotty and David Ferentz and Cock-Consalo, and the list kind of goes on and on. So bit of a learning curve there, but there's a player where I can definitely see him staying at least 3 years, but probably 4. And I think so far the returns have been positive.
The Red Wings, obviously, as they always have, a number of European prospects within their system, thanks to the influence of Håkan Andersson and the amazing job he's done restaffing that team during that run where they very infrequently had high picks. But only one player in their top 10, in Future Watch at least, currently playing in Europe, and that's Gustav Lindstrom.
Yeah, this is an intriguing defenseman. They took him in the second round. He's playing for Almtuna right now. And, a good season against men. He was on the World Junior team for Sweden, so he's got a silver medal. Didn't play a huge role on that squad, but you have to remember there was a ton of talent on that blue line, talking about guys like Rasmus Dahlin and Timothy Liljegren, and they really had a nice cohort there. But, with Lindstrom, you're looking at a guy 6'2" already. And, he's got good compete level, makes a good first pass. He's got a nice shot. He needs to get stronger, which we say about a ton of prospects, almost all of them. And, again, the fact that he's playing against men in the Allsvenskan, I think, is very positive. And there's time for him. You can see him. You get that off-ice training. Spend a couple of years in Europe. And then when you're ready, come over. And I think there's a nice future for him.
A few prospects who may be a little closer to seeing time with the Red Wings are some of their players who are currently developing with the Grand Rapids Griffins in the AHL. Let's start with Evgeny Svechnikov, whose brother we talked about earlier.
Yeah, and this has been sort of an up-and-down year for Svechnikov. I think a lot more was expected offensively from him. And part of it's growing pains. He is still very young, and this is a player where you don't want to rush him because he is a first rounder. He has a lot of upside. He's that big bodied, scoring player, much like his brother. So I think for Svechnikov, he's learning the pro game. He's learning to play that long schedule. He came out of major junior, so he's played a pretty good schedule in the past, but now you're going up against men every night. You know, you're doing those potential 3-and-3s on the weekend where you really have to figure out, you know, how to treat your body right, how to get rest. And it's tough because, you know, if you're a Red Wings fan, right now your NHL team's not doing very well. So you're hoping that your prospects are kind of like, you know, banging on the door. I think what we've seen this year is that some of the Red Wings kids need a bit more time. And that's okay, even though it's kind of frustrating. Looking elsewhere on that Griffins team, there's a lot of nice sort of mid to undersized defensemen, and it's created a bit of a logjam. It's something that needs to be sorted out, and there's three players to keep an eye on. You got Philip Roenick, Ville Saarijärvi, and Joe Hicketts. And with Roenick and Saarijärvi in particular, these are your sort of classic modern puck movers where, we know they need to get stronger, and, you know, having them play against men and getting minutes is the most important thing right now, because we've seen them put up points at the junior level and be impact guys. Now it's a matter of figuring out how to have success against men at the pro level. So they're going to keep doing that. I think, you know, we still need to see a little more time from them. And I mean, the thing is, you know, with the Red Wings, you know, Mike Green, we thought he'd get traded at deadline, neck injury, you know, took care of that. It didn't happen. So, you know, maybe we would have seen, a little more movement there had Green been moved earlier in the season. Hard to say. It's all hindsight now. But it'll be interesting to see how many slots are available for players next year on that Red Wings blue line. Hicketts, a bit older than the other two. You know, this is a player where I know he's got a lot of fans. I was a big Joe Hicketts fan when the Red Wings signed him. He wasn't drafted, but they picked him up pretty quick after that. He was at that Traverse City tournament that the Red Wings put on, where you get a lot of great competition in the summer. They have 8 NHL teams there. And Hicketts was a standout. He's undersized, but, I mean, he's so, like, gritty. And, you know, he's got some skill, but, like, he's got so much character, and he's physical. He's just really tough to play against. And, the numbers aren't, like, fantastic this year. But, again, you've got a lot of competition. There's only going to be so many power play minutes to go around. There's only going to be so many offensive opportunities. And you do have to take care of your own end. So I still think there's a lot to like about Joe Hicketts. And next year, it's going to be big for the Red Wings. I think it's going to be another transition rebuild year for them. And that's a good thing. And now it's just a matter of, like, which kids are going to, you know, sort of work their way to the top and get those chances early.
Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be a quick turnaround for the Detroit Red Wings. This isn't a rebuild on the fly. This is a team that needs a serious teardown. They began that process this year. They got some contracts in the books that makes it tough to sign anybody. They don't have a super high-end system, according to Future Watch. They've got a B-minus ranking, 21st overall in the league. So there are going to be a few more years of pain before we see maybe even the playoffs again in Detroit.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing is GM Ken Holland has prepared himself very well this summer. They got a lot of draft picks. I think they have like 8 in the first 4 rounds. So they're prepared to have another big year. I liked their 2017 draft because they had a ton of picks. And, you know, when you're at this point of a rebuild, that's what you want to do. You want to be making like 11 or 12 picks in a draft if you can, because you want to cast that wide net. You want to look at different positions, filling those in, getting a couple of goalies, getting some defensemen, taking some chances. And I think they did that. So there's options there. There's going to be way more options after this draft that takes place in Dallas. And from there, it's just develop and see who rises to the top.
Well, speaking of Dallas, they'll be the team focus on the next edition of the Prospect Podcast. But for this week, that's all our look around the world. For Ryan Kennedy, I'm host Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.